Good afternoon, you're listening to the Artist Space, Dublin City FM's weekly art programme with myself, Ray Burke. If you want to contact the show, you can email us at artistspace@dublincityfm.ie, and you can also now podcast our show. The address is theartistspace@podomatic.com. There is a Nighttunes logo at the side of the page, on the right-hand side of the page, and if you click on that, the latest show, today's will be posted up this evening, will download into your iTunes. It will also give you the option to subscribe to the podcast and also to listen to previous episodes too. Over the last 9 weeks, we've been covering and previewing various events that have been happening across Dublin. One of the major events that have taken place over the last few weeks or months in the city is the opening of the Oliver Sears Gallery at 29 Molesworth Street. Oliver has 20 years experience working in the art world as an art dealer and collector, and has opened the impressive gallery to host the work of his impressive client list. Now, opening a gallery in what might be the most challenging time for the Irish art market might seem like an irrational move, but if you were one of the thousands that attended any of the events that took place over the recent Innovation Festival in the city, you'll know that according to many a successful entrepreneur, a recession can actually be a good time to start a business. So hopefully the gallery on 29 Molesworth Street will be such an enterprise. It is definitely a welcome addition to Dublin. The gallery is housed in a fantastic Georgian building and has just opened its third exhibition in its existence. One of the things that hits you when you walk into the gallery is the calibre of artists and the quality of the work on show. Oliver took me on a tour of the gallery and the current show.
This show, which is called Now and Then, it is divided into two parts. The ground floor is a collection of, I suppose, world famous artists by and large, artists whose work I have been involved in, I've been looking at, or have collected works by over the last 20 years, which is the period of my own experience. And essentially we're using this particular group show to highlight or showcase what the gallery is about. So we have a dedicated program of gallery artists and what we've called guest artists, artists that we don't represent but who we are going to have shows by next year. So just walking you round this room, we have works by David Hockney, Sean Scully, Robert Motherwell, Leon Kossoff, and then into this room, Tom Wesselman, Philip Guston, Pierre Soulages, France's greatest living artist, Anselm Kiefer, and Joan Mitchell. So you have really, if you like, in just a handful of pictures, you have a taste of some of the more interesting artists in the last kind of 50 years, really.
Oliver and I moved upstairs where he talked me through several of the artists, highlighting passionate reasons as to why the artists were chosen.
So on the first floor, this is the part of the show that has works by gallery artists, so those are artists that we represent already, and guest artists, artists who we don't represent but will be having solo shows by in 2011. One of the most interesting artists that I'm really delighted to show is Joseph Walsh, who is a 30-year-old furniture maker from Cork, whose work he describes as somewhere between art and architecture. It's extraordinary both in design and execution. These tables that you see in front of you are from a series called the Erosion series, and if you look at them from this particular angle, you can clearly see that one just follows on from the other. It's the next part of the tree. So it's extraordinary. The design is informed by essentially the shape of the tree. So each, it's a series of 12, but each section is unique.
How did you discover Joe's work?
Joe, because I was based down in Kinsale for so many years, and he is actually his workshop is just outside. I was introduced to his work by a very good friend of mine who had come across him. And I have been very familiar with it for the last 8 years, and I'm really, really excited that we've managed to kind of join forces.
So is this one of the guest artists, or is this one of the ones?
No, this is an artist who we're now representing.
Brilliant.
Yeah. And he's incredibly well established already in the States. In fact, the Metropolitan Museum in New York intend on buying one of these tables.
Oh, brilliant.
So that's a huge bonus for him. Huey O'Donoghue,
of course,
is an artist who I'm sure you're familiar with. This work forms part of the series of paintings that he showed with me in
Just Gone
in the summer. Then Sean Hillen, this work has actually been well reproduced in the press recently. And we're having in fact, our next show will be a solo show with him.
But that's in the new year?
That's in February.
February,
exactly.
Okay.
And I'm really... Sean is someone I only recently came across through a mutual friend. And I was actually ashamed that I hadn't come across him. He's so intelligent. His images, some of the images he's made are iconic, particularly photo montages of the Troubles. And I've always had a really soft spot in my heart for satirists, and there just aren't enough intelligent artists making satire, and given the times we're in, it would be a good thing if they found their voice a little more strongly, in my opinion. But he's a really great artist, and so very, very pleased to have him as our next guest artist, or gallery artist, sorry. Moving into this larger space, Conrad Botez is a really interesting artist who comes from South Africa. He's a white South African. These are reverse glass paintings. He really works in a comic strip style, and was one of the architects of a magazine called Bitter Comics, which ran in the 90s and the noughties. So essentially, really post-apartheid. He was a post-apartheid campaigner for essentially drawing attention to white man's sexual inadequacy and domination, if you like, or fear. And that whole topic is something that is so fascinating, because we're essentially in the West where we live, we thought of apartheid, or the dynamic between white man and oppressed black man, in very simple terms. Mm-hmm. We don't really know much about what goes on in the society and in the psyche now.
Mm-hmm.
So he's a really, really interesting artist in that way.
I'm not familiar with his work. Has he exhibited in Dublin before, in Ireland before?
Never in Ireland, but he has a growing reputation. His work has appeared in museum shows. In fact, there's one at a museum in Germany, Villa Rote Museum, right now. A marvellous 35-panel piece called Judas, which is basically his interpretation of the story of Judas done against an apartheid backdrop. So it's a very clever and intelligent. Mark Fannington is an artist who we are planning to have a solo show of in April. And he is essentially an artist who paints animals and wildlife, but not in a dry, photorealistic manner. There is always some unusual element. This painting, which is called Sable, employs palladium leaf, which is something that I have never come across before, for example. But his paintings are very accessible because they are beautiful to look at, but there is always something else going on. They're more complicated than just a pretty picture.
Yeah. As regards the guests, what were you looking for personally yourself when you were putting the show together on top of the artists that the gallery are going to represent? Is there,
I suppose,
consistent running through it?
There isn't. Other than a particular quality, I have, I suppose, very broad tastes. But I generally, I do have a leaning towards painting that I know, and I like things that have technical qualities. None of this is unconditional, mm-hmm. But those are my own leanings. And I think when I was assembling this show, I knew the artists that interested me. I was then delighted to get works by them. Mm-hmm. And then when they all arrived here, I had absolutely no idea how the whole thing might work together. And that took three of us 2.5 days of fiddling to try and get some sense of it. And in fact, there is. And it's a very, very good question to ask me, because in fact, there is a theme that runs through it. It is one of, I think there is a very human streak in all of it, even if you have things as disparate as furniture and landscape. I mean, this is a pinhole drawing. This is a drawing made simply by expertly piercing two blank pieces of paper. I just feel there is a sort of utter conviction by all these artists that's something that brings them together. There is no sense, I get no sense that the works have just been, if you like, manufactured or churned out. They look like very serious artists with something to say. Mm-hmm. I think that's what brings them together. But sometimes you need to see it in situ and stand back to really fathom that.
Absolutely. Just to get to the actual artist that the gallery does represent.
Yeah, we represent Patrick O'Reilly, very famous mm-hmm. for his bears, but many other things. So we've had two solo shows by him this year already. In a pop-up space, I had a show of his, if you like, non-bronze work in May in a 13,000 square foot space on Mespel Road.
Okay.
And that was really well received and attended. And the show before this was a sculpture show with bronzes, and it was called Bronzes and Metal Objects, including a 25-foot cathedral made out of tin cans that we installed in the courtyard. So Patrick is a really interesting artist whose work I've known for a number of years, but an individual I have known really closely for at least 2 years, mm. and someone I have enormous admiration for. He's someone who is, he is the real McCoy as an artist. He is incredibly inventive. Original is a word that is bandied around. I don't see too many original artists, really, I don't. But I would say in all sincerity, he is an original artist. And so here is another version of a bear, but there is so much more to Patrick than this iconic bear.
Just in relation to the artists that you are representing, you said that you've worked in the field for 20 odd years. Was this the next logical step, putting the gallery together?
It's odd. I never had a kind of 20-year game plan. My business started with a lot of brass neck and 300 quid 20 years ago. And I've gone down sort of the odd cul-de-sac and black hole in between. And I think art businesses evolve and develop, and there is an awful lot of reacting that has to be done. But oddly, I found as a private dealer, while it offers incredible mobility and can be very exciting, just making deal after deal doesn't give you anything like the creativity that a gallery gives you. And certainly I felt we were getting to a critical point where I was representing an artist of the caliber of Huey O'Donoghue, for example, without a gallery space. I can't just simply jump from pop-up location to pop-up location. There comes a stage where you actually lose credibility. Mm-hmm. So then once the seed was planted that this is something that should be done, it was a question of looking at what other artists were out there. Patrick and I certainly were working closely together, so there was a feeling that Patrick was incredibly supportive of the idea, almost insistent of it. Joseph Walsh was someone I really wanted to bring on. I'm a huge fan of his work, but without a proper gallery space, why would they want to? Why would they want to show their work? And Stephen Lawler, who is a Dublin-based artist I've already had a solo show with, is a very close friend of mine, an artist I've known 15 years or so. These artists were artists and friends were instrumental in encouraging me and supporting me, and we've all kind of parked our egos. We know that this is a crisis we're in, it's a hard time, but that something extraordinary can be done. And they've all sort of the attitude is all hands to the pump. Mm-hmm. It's fantastic to see. And I ran across Keith Wilson, who's someone I've known for 15 years, an immensely gifted landscape painter from Northern Ireland. And we reconnected, if you like, and I was just delighted to be able to hook up. And this is what I've discovered: if you commit to a gallery, a beautiful space, you do things properly. Incredibly interesting things happen.
I guess as well, the success of the Lawler exhibition bodes well for the future.
I can't read what the future will bring. All I can do, I don't want to be evasive or smart. I just can do my best, and I want this. I so much want this gallery just to be the best I can make it. Mm-hmm. I'm not under any illusions. It's hard out there, but it's something for very personal reasons that feels absolutely right to me now.
You've got an amazing location, and the building.
Right. The building was a catalyst. That's clear. It was an opportunity to raise the level for me, and I had to look at it very carefully. I had to look at, the possibility of missing out on this building and trying to think about replacing it. And somehow it's so obviously a superb location that I think it would have been a mistake to let it go.
Mm-hmm. Here and Now runs at the gallery until the end of January and will be followed, as Oliver said, with Sean Hillen's exhibition in February. On Thursday the 9th of December at 6 p.m, Oliver will give a talk on the Here and Now exhibition and an overview on art collecting. You're listening to The Artist Space on 103.2 Dublin City FM. If you want to contact the show, you can email us at artistspace@dublincityfm. And as I said at the top of the programme, you can also now podcast our show. The address is theartistspace@podomatic.com. Conor McGarrigle is a Dublin-based internet artist who has been working within the medium for 10 years now. Some of you might have heard or read about him in the news recently and his iPhone application Namaland, which cleverly highlights the areas of the city where the properties are owned by Nama. I spoke to Conor earlier to talk about something even newer he has developed. Walkspace is an alternative art walking application for the iPhone.
It's based on a project I did before, which was called Joyce Walks, and this was a project which used Google Maps And the idea of it was that I would remap routes that were mentioned in Ulysses. So this would be typically a chapter of Ulysses, and something that you would reenact, say, Bloomsday and Bloomsday celebrations in Dublin. But it would map it to any city in the world, and people would use it to go on a walk. And it would be, in some ways, a walk, you know, reenacting scenes from Ulysses. But in other ways, it would obviously be just a kind of a random walk, because, you know, if you take Ulysses out of Dublin, it doesn't actually make any sense. So Walkspace is this on the iPhone. It's, you can put any, the idea is that anyone can make a walk and make it available through the app. So perhaps if you have your walk to work every day, if you wanted to put it on, you could make that into a map, put it on the on Walkspace, and then someone in Brazil could reenact your walk as a kind of a copy of it. But obviously it would be a completely different context.
Yeah, yeah, just to clarify, so it works in a way that it doesn't have any, there's clear defined walks in the respect that people map them out, but they can be appropriated anywhere else in the world?
Yeah, that's the idea. That was the original idea, was that you could walk it anywhere, and that it would just be, it comes from this idea. There's, in the kind of the 50s and 60s in France, there's a group called the Situationists. They were interested in this idea that, you know, we became kind of creatures of habit, particularly in an urban setting, and that we only went to the places that we liked to go to, and we didn't really experience the city in a proper way. So they came up with a technique to walk in the city in a random way that you couldn't kind of predict where you'd leave. So this is this idea that, you know, it's a way of kind of re-engaging you with the city by taking you on a, it would give you a set of instructions, so you'd have to kind of follow this route, but it would bring you to places where maybe you hadn't been there before. Okay. And it's still, I mean, this whole idea has still got, there's a lot of interest in it kind of internationally, and, I mean, the original project, Joyce Walks, I mean, it has been done in over 70 cities around the world, and I think we're up at kind of 600-700 walks at the moment, from all sorts of interesting places. You know, it's very, very popular in Brazil, and it's been done, in, I think, in 10 different cities in Brazil, which was kind of very, very interesting to me, because I had no idea that people were interested in Ulysses in Brazil, for example. So it's one of these things that has kind of thrown up unexpected results and in that way it's been great.
You originally trained as a biochemist, which for a science could be considered to be fairly directly linked to art, but all the stuff now, as we said before, that is technologically based. Did all these ideas come before the kind of technical aptitude?
I think my science background is kind of, that's a long time ago, and I guess I was always interested. I was interested in science. I'm interested in technology, and I mean, I'm very interested in artists who work with technology, because I think technology, it defines, you know, defines our culture and society in so many ways these days, and that it seems very important to me that artists would actually engage with it, and, you know, either as critiquing technology or maybe explaining it in different ways. So I've always been interested in this kind of interface of art meets technology, and that there always seems to be something very, very, very interesting and kind of very crucial and important going on there.
I can understand the interest in the correlation between art and science, but is it important for you as regards the creativity, that, you know, the kind of artistic concept, to be able to do all this stuff, or is this something that's easily outsourced?
I tend to do a certain portion of it myself. I mean, I'm not a programmer. I'm kind of more a hacker. I can figure out how to do a certain amount of stuff, but certainly when it came to the iPhone, I had to get help with that, because the level of programming was kind of beyond my capabilities. So I was able to collaborate actually with my wife on that one, which was very fortunate. But certainly, I like to do a certain amount myself. I wouldn't like to outsource everything, because I think there's a certain amount in the actual doing it. There's a certain amount of serendipity that, you know, you can come up with results that maybe weren't quite what you expected, but you know, the actual process itself can lend to that kind of act of discovery, of discovering that, you know, it takes you in a slightly different direction than you originally envisaged. Whereas if you had it outsourced, you know, entirely, you never get that.
I wonder, due to the popularity of the application and the way in which it was used, had Connor been approached by any advertisers or companies wishing to use the application commercially?
Not particularly advertising, but certainly have had some interest in, you know, working with people on kind of tourism related applications. Yeah, because obviously it lends itself to that. So, and that's certainly something, you know, that I'd be interested in to develop, you know, kind of commercial applications, but, you know, based on the infrastructure or what I've developed to actually put the apps in place. But it would be separate. It would be a separate kind of commercial application, not separate to the art applications.
In his work 24, which was shown at the Science Gallery in 2008, Connor took the idea of mass surveillance and turned it on its head in an attempt to make something beautiful. And with Namaland, he took something negative and attempted to look at the positives of it. I finished up by asking Connor if he was a bit of an optimist.
That's what they say to me. I'm not sure, but I think what I like to do is I like to just, you know, look at things in different ways. And certainly, you know, with Dublin 24, it was this idea of, you know, we're quite familiar with the idea that, you know, surveillance cameras, you know, all the negative connotations of them. But the way what I did with that was, you know, I followed the sunrise and the sunset across Dublin with all these cameras. And, you know, there are so many cameras that you could get. I had 100 cameras in different from all around the city, and you could see, you know, correlating them, so you could see the sunrise and then, you know, every hour of the day over 24 hour period. And I mean, with Namaland was a little different in that Namaland was just kind of making visible something that we're not being allowed access. So the idea of, you know, what buildings are in Nama, we can't know that. That's a kind of it's a state secret or something like that. So, you know, building on someone else's work in this kind of collaborative, which I think is very typical of the digital age that we're in, this a work that relies on someone else's input. So I build on the work of Nama Wine Lake, and to visualize, so you can actually see when you hold up your phone, you can actually see what buildings are in Nama and what buildings aren't in Nama. So it's a little more empowering, I think, rather than just seeing things in a negative light. I like to kind of see, well, we can still have a critique of these things, but maybe we can do it in maybe a little bit more positively.
Connor's website is www.connormcgarrigle.com. It has links for you to download any of the apps Connor mentioned, which, as we said, are free. There is also a great database of all his previous work, where an online work is no longer live anymore. It exists as an archive site, so you can navigate and experience how it was when it was initially up. Unfortunately, that brings us to the end of this week's programme. Next week on the show, I'll be speaking to Michael Dempsey about the Gavin Murphy exhibition at the Douglas High Gallery, and I'll also be talking to Jimmy Lawler about his exhibition Going Forward, which opens tomorrow at 6:30 p.m. at the Sala Art Gallery in Dawson Street. You've been listening to The Artist Space on 103.2 Dublin City FM. If you want to contact the show, you can email us at artistspace@dublincityfm, and you can also now podcast our show. The address is theartistspace@podomatic.com. Next up here is Student Talk. Thanks for listening, and please tune back again at the same time next week.